Jeremiah chapter 17, verses 5 to 10. I'll just give you a few thoughts and starting off this morning. You know that our country has just gone through a big change politically in our government.
Pick up my
kids. And I've been thinking a lot about
pick up your
that.
Kids.
Oh. I should have known that.
See you guys later.
Most of us can kind of reach a place in life where we can get along, but I don't think they're going to let us do that. I think they're going to continue to try to divide us and make us separate from each other and angry with each other. But it got me thinking about something, and it has to do with what is ever permanent in what I call power politics. What is ever alliances and leaders and all those things in global politics change not only contemporarily, if you would, but also across history and across time. Isaiah said this, and I want you to think about this in terms of the political politics of the Bible. Isaiah said this in Isaiah 31 and verse 3, the Egyptians are made and not God. Their horses are flesh and not spirit. When the Lord stretches out his hand, the helper will stumble. He who has helped will fall, and they will all perish together. Now, I should have put that on the screen, maybe, but what it's basically saying is this. You can reach out as a country for help, but like Israel did from time to time, they did Egypt for the Babylon. But be assured that that help that you seek eventually it too will fall, and in the process, you will likely fall with it. That nothing, in fact, is stable. Probably more what it's saying is God is paying attention to what's going on. Because in Isaiah is prophesying time to Israel, and Israel had in its history relied on Egypt. In its history, several times, it relied on Babylon and other nation states, and they should have been, get this, here's a novel idea for God's people. They should have been relying on God. And when Isaiah speaks, it says in Isaiah 31, verse 3, the Egyptians are mad, and they're not God. God's saying you can't get the priorities wrong. You got the relationship wrong. But he says their horses are of flesh and not spirit. You need to understand they're trusting in their military might when you ought to be trusting in God's might. And the whole time God is saying, I'm paying attention. This passage of story doesn't tell us with any kind of certainty anything about the historical particulars. In fact, if you were to ask biblical scholars about Jeremiah 17, they would say to you, well, it probably has to do with one of two kings that were really not sure. I told you, but what you do need to know is that who is referring to probably doesn't actually matter, because the point is not who you're depending on in history, but rather who you're depending on in all life circumstances. Is it somebody fleshly, earthly, contemporary to you, or is it the God who has created you? And here in Jeremiah chapter 17, I'm going to read these verses for you this morning a little bit slower. Now, usually, I go a verse at a time. We're going to go a couple of verses at a time this morning. We're going to go back and forth a little so much to see here that I think you need to see to understand what this passage is telling us. And here's verses 5 and 6. Thus says the Lord, cursed is the man who trusts in me, who makes flesh his strength, whose heart turns away from the Lord. He's like a shrub in the desert, and he shall not see any good come. He will dwell in the parched places of the wilderness and in uninhabited salt land. Who's cursed? Who has decided that they are going to rely on somebody else, somebody here, Babylon, Egypt, whoever, and you can bring that up to our current situation, and you can even bring it down to your own life. To ask the question, who am I really relying upon? That's the curse. But in this passage, Jeremiah also tells us that there are those who are blessed. And that occurs in the next few verses 7 and 8. Look at it. Blessed is the one who trusts the Lord, whose trust is the Lord. He will be like a tree planted by water that sends out its roots by the stream. And does not, let me stop and say something. I didn't mention this in that first half, the first verse, but they're like a plant in the desert. You can rain on the door and watch that system grow with it and grow. It's not going to do anything with regards to fruitfulness. It's just going to be there and try to survive. But look at this. Read by the water. When you root, come out and search and go all over the place. If you try to pack up and get ready for this big transition that I keep telling you about, some of you know that I can do a little bit of hydroponic gardening, right? I mean, I grow little cherry tomatoes. Hobby out yet. And I was cleaning those things up. I didn't feel out thinking about when you take it and get down into the water, you would be so amazed at the root system. I mean, the root system is just, it's a big tub about that long, like that deep. I have three of them. And the roots just go everywhere. Blessed is the man who trusts the Lord, whose trust is the Lord. Like a tree planted by the water, it sets on its roots by the stream. It doesn't fear when heat comes. Its leaves will remain green. It's not anxious in a year of drought, for it never ceases to bear fruit. See, there's a difference. The curse never produces, never changes. Sometimes God has to bless as a root system that goes out searching for water, and therefore, when the hard times come, continues produce food. If this sounds familiar to you, it probably be because you tried to read the book of Psalms one time. I hope you made it all the way over to the end. Right very early in the book of Psalms, chapter 1, the first Psalm, the third and fourth verses, you read something like this. Who's the person that trusts in the Lord? He's like a tree that's planted by streams of water that yield its fruit in due season. Its leaves never wither, and all that he does, he prospers. The wicked are not slow. They're like the chaff that the wind drives away. This couple of passages that are on the screen right now reflects those people, those in a nation, but I will focus on the individual this morning, who really know how to trust in God. Because the results of the two possibilities, trusting in God or trusting in other people, make a difference. It really makes a difference. But those who rely on people or anything other than God, and those that learn to trust in the Lord will be blessed. Let's go back to verse 5 as I told you that. Curse. Curse. Come on. Curse. What does it mean to be cursed? One that trusts in people, one that makes his strength and his ability, and who in the process their heart away from the Lord. You know, we do that. We don't realize sometimes, I don't think, that we do that. I'm going to talk this morning about just how sin sick we are. We don't realize that some of you ISIS effect, a really, really strong effect. Because we want to believe they'll pay for it. Dumb people are basically good. And it flies in the face of what actually God says. So stay with me this morning, and we'll get your income. Isn't that where the curse comes from? Trust. Maybe himself. Maybe his own strength. But in the process of putting that turn away from God. Isaiah said this. Awesome, declares the Lord. You carry out a plan, but not my plan. And you make alliances, but not with my spirit. And you had stand upon sin. The cursed person chooses, listen to it, to not only trust in the wrong things and the wrong people, maybe, but also in the process, when it says sin upon sin, add sin to sin, once it gets started, it's almost like a domino. It's just that you've done it once, you do it again. That goes with all of our life. Once we make a compromise, once we fail in some area of our spiritual life, it makes it so much easier to do it time and time again. When we mind off that, yes, sometimes you can trust in the wrong things and it works out okay, well, that'll make it easier next time. And pretty soon, what you didn't think it as well, if it is to be, it's up to me. That's not true. The church and I never stop and say something I didn't intend to say, I say to you right now. Sometimes God puts individuals and churches into those positions in order to really teach us that it is to be up to Him and not up to Him. He wants to know if we really want His blessing by who we rely on, what we're trusting in. The blessing comes in verses 7 to 8. I've already had those. I want to see. Blessed is the one who trusts in the Lord, whose trust is the Lord. So you see in this passage this morning, there is both a curse and a blessing. And the way you need to look at these things is that when we choose to depend on anything other than God, our spiritual life not only will not thrive, it will not survive. Not only will it not thrive, it will not survive. But depending upon God means a spiritual life that's healthy, that's growing, that's abundant, that has not only growth promise, but fruit promise. And to do anything other than trusting God is a reflection of unbelief, it's a life in a parched desert. It's life in a parched desert. Water and go away to the roots to find help. But faith in God can become a beautiful, fruitful, productive life in the garden. Psalmist said this: those who will trust in the Lord are like Mount Zion, which cannot be moved, but abides forever. Now we sang a song this morning that for some of you was going, what's he like? This for you know, although we'll plot some of you here. Finally, he brings something to woke us up. But you know, there used to be a song in the old church that some of you may have heard before. I shall not be moved. How many of you ever heard that before? I shall not be moved. I shall not be moved. It was a song that we used to say in the old church. But often, when we've sing that in some of the churches I've served down south of here, we would say that. What it really meant was, I'm going to continue to do exactly what I've done, exactly the way I've always done it, and nobody's going to change me, including God. You've got to understand, church, that sometimes even what we think is spiritual is really all about us. Not at all. Thomas said, if you trust in the Lord, you will be like Mount Zion. Nobody moves Mount Zion. Mount Zion abides forever. As they would say to another one, you will keep. recently I had a Bible study group here that it was so redemptive to me when I reached a place in my ministry. I can pinpoint it for you where it was at. See, when you come to a church and you're 22 years old as a pastor, you actually believe in your thinking that you're supposed to have all the answers. But after you pastor for about a year or two, the wake-up call is you don't know anything. You're in fact down on a sled track. But anyway, I became so redemptive one day I can tell you what church it was in, what Bible study was in, the room that I was in. The person who asked the question, when I looked back at them and said, I don't know. It was so redemptive. And you keep swinging, and you wear yourself out finally to say, God, this is yours. My life is really different than that. When you finally realize that it's not up to me, and that I can trust Him for my future, and I can trust Him for what comes next. Because if there's anything in this world that back and recognize who you were say 20 years ago, you probably don't recognize that person. You don't realize it because it's changed over time. People change, the governments change, the leaders change, and everything changes. But God is the same yesterday, today, and forever. He always has been, He always will be. He's the first and the last. He's the Alpha, He's the Omega. And if there's any point of stability in this world, you have to ask yourself this question. And here's where it's going to get tough. Here's the question. If there really is a curse in not following God, depending on others, depending on self, depending on things, and if there really is a blessing in simply placing our trust and our faith in Him, why would any of us, here's the question, why would any of us ever consider doing anything but depending on Him? It is a really good question. But here's the answer to the question. And here's where you're going to struggle with it. Okay? Here's where I'm going to determine that my car keys are right here, and when I left this morning, you'll go that way, I'll go that way. Look at this next verse, which we've already read. The heart is deceitful above all things, and it is desperately sick. Who can understand it? I want you to take a minute to read that. I'll make a sip of coffee. Solomon said this: keep your heart with all vigilance, for from it flow the springs of life. Keep your heart with vigilance, for from it flow the springs of life. My wife's been away this week. She never even, she doesn't come home tomorrow night. Called me yesterday and said, can you just keep my flight up and you can't get out of here today? I can't stand these kids who raise their shit. Jane, she was watching her dog and taking Bailey to home Friday and Saturday. And they were sick. And she didn't want to get sick. So she called me and said, you know, can you get me out of here so I don't know if get whatever it got to get her out of there. But I spent a week bacheloring at the dog. And y'all know I've had this heart problem. And I've been eating all these oatmeal and broccoli and mushrooms and onions and all this stuff, you know. I've been avoiding all meat that I can. I haven't done room for that. This fasting was pretty good, right? And she called me, I said, oh, yeah, I'll get you out of there. You know, I'll get you to work. But I got her last night. She was in Nashville. You know, she had to stop in Nashville that she was going to Cleveland. But she's in Nashville. I said, hey, I'm leaving to go get you. Do you want something to eat? You know, would you like me to have something there for you? She said, no. I get the car at 11:15 last night. So it was late to eat. She's been on a plane since 2 o'clock or something. And I said, you know, do you want something? She said, no. When I asked her originally, but often in Nashville, she said, I really like to have something, even if it's between her flight from Austin to Nashville, I'm in Applebee's, right? And I got myself, I think it was a bacon cheeseburger with french fries. And I want to tell you, it's good. I mean, to let me know just exactly how important this is, I'm driving between the eating the cheeseburger and french fries, and I finish it. And now I've got to dispose of the bag, right? And I'm thinking, oh, this car breaks. Smells like a greasy cheeseburger. She's going to know. Right? But in Nashville, she says, I'd like something to eat, even if it's pizza. So I go into this Domino's, you know. I get, we don't eat Domino's office. One place to find, and I order her this cheese pizza. Put it in the city, go to the airport. Actually, you can go out and come back, see my car today. She gets into the car. Oh, thank you for giving me some pizza. I had paper plates they gave me there for her. She gets the pizza. She says, do you want these? I'm like, well, you know, I had oatmeal all the morning this week, and I had my broccoli, and I had my cauliflower, and I get on raw. But I just ate this heavy cheeseburger. It's very dry. I can't open it. She gets a second, she won't have a word. I said, nah. Oh, yeah, yeah. Can I tell you something today? And my whole I'm having chest pain, right? The heart is the single of all things. That's what they say. Who can understand the problem? Someone says, from the heart, about a church, your heart comes to blood throughout your system. It was keeps everything going and healthy and fit.
I don't think I can go vegan.
Brings the blood.
I need a carnival. I don't think I can do it. I like vegetables. I don't think I can do it.
Just like blood from flowing through our physical body. And the blood in our veins and our arteries are all subject to what we eat, what we put into ourselves. It will move disease and decay along a lot quicker when we do wrong things, right? It's true in our spiritual life. The springs of life that God gives us that come from a heart, they also, because the heart is so deceptive, it also has the potential to deliver death and destruction with us as if we ate a spiritual cheeseburger and had
is saying that send it to Google. It says the likely culprit of the ringing is either an internal ribbon cable that's become loose or faulty inductor. I'm assuming the inductor is soldered in.
Yeah,
I would think so. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
and the insane. It was the power inductor, the 15 plus 4 supply, specifically the 56 2H. They seem to have identified two of the entire that seems to be a problem. So, I'm hoping it's worth the game. I'm doubting it's worth the game. Is the under warranty still?
I can do it how I want to do it. And it did.
I'm doubting it. Because I think we bought it before COVID. So I think that would be 5 years old at least. I'm doubting it.
I know you threw that cheeseburger bag in the back seat, but you never find out. But God, so David was calm. You find in Psalm 51 where he realizes just exactly.
Anybody you know is good at soldering circuit boards.
And that's the problem. I don't think we realize
that the number of circuit boards
is so deceptive.
I'll test where we came first.
We get to give you the bits ourselves. I can get books written that say you have titles like this, I'm okay, you're okay. Right? We want to convince ourselves that people are really good, not generally good. I'm a good person. I do not seem to be God said in our hearts to seek the full above all things. It's desperately sick. So David, the apple of God's eye, the king of Israel, chosen, he's calling the carpet. He has to deal with who he really is. And he prays these words. I was brought forth in iniquity, and in sin did my mother conceive. David has to look at the mirror and look at his own eyes. Look into his own heart and say, you know, I don't have a problem. Psalm 53 says, the fool says in his heart, there's no God. They're corrupt. They do a lot of iniquity. There's none who does good. God goes down from heaven on the children of men to see if there are any who understand, who seek after God. They have all fallen away. Together they become corrupt. There's no one who does good, not even one. Who didn't even tell me about one of us telling one? You didn't even tell me I thought he was no one. Just you living since long you deceived yourself. And your heart is so sick you don't even realize it's. You can't know it because you've fooled yourself for so long. No one understands. No one can know. But God, no one can know. You know, when Jesus gives his sermon on the mount, he says this: out of the heart come evil thoughts, murder, adultery, sexual immorality, theft, false witness. You forgot. I don't know if you're wrong. You forgot to bring it in your mind. I'm about to take you back there. Did you see what Jesus has said on the Sermon on the Mount? It's just exactly what Jeremiah was saying. The heart is deceptive of all things, and it was very sick. It is easy enough. Who can know it? Jesus is saying, look, you think it's what you do, it's not what you do. It's actually who you are. Actually, not that you picked up the hammer and committed murder that you wanted to. 6, who can understand it? And the Bible uniquely tells us time and ages that we can understand our own heart. I want you to look at what Jeremiah 10 says. I, the Lord, search the heart and test the mind. Hear every man according to his ways, according to the fruit of his deeds. Basically, what Jeremiah calls us is that the heart is corrupt, incurable, sick, beyond repair. And most of the time, people like you and me don't even know. But God not only knows what's going on in the front seat of man, he knows what we've thrown in the back seat. Let me put verses 9 and 10 together. The heart is deceitful above all things, desperately sick. Who can know it? Who can understand it? I, the Lord, search the heart. I test the mind, give every man according to his ways, according to the fruit of his deeds. Look at that question. Who can understand it? And the answer that Jeremiah gives us is not us, but God. Paul will say in the New Testament, the things that I should do, I don't do. The things that I shouldn't do are the things I do. Oh, wretched man that I am. Who can help me with this? And the answer is God. We don't understand ourselves. God does. He knows us and our hearts better than we know ourselves. For the next few minutes, I want you to really listen close to what I said. The reason God knows our hearts, because he's God, and he knows. The reason God knows us is because he's God, and he knows. But we know our hearts because of what we do and what others do. We know that. God created us. He knows everything about us. We can't look at ourselves and say, I'm good. I'm kind, I do good things, I would hurt a fly. God says, God wants to direct me. We can look at each other and evaluate, don't we? We have this little measuring stick. Instead of letting the measuring stick be God, we usually let it be ourselves. The reason is because we have made God into our image. So we say, I can feel pretty nice. He does things like, I don't know, I think he'll be pretty nice. You know, I think Chris is okay, because Chris does things the way I do, so Chris will be a pretty good person. Understand this. God knows our hearts because he's God, and he just knows. The only evaluation system that you and I have is what people do. Look again. I, the Lord, search the heart of hear every man according to what he does, according to the fruit of his deeds. But God is looking at the heart. He knows the motivating factor. People do the right thing all the time for all the wrong reasons. Did you know that? All the time. Really good things. But not because their heart is right with God, because it's going to benefit them. God simply knows. God doesn't, think about this for a minute, this verse. God doesn't need to wait until harvest to see the fruit. God can look at the seed and tell you how that's going to go. The tree has no idea. The seed has no idea. God knows our hearts because he's God and he knows. We know our hearts because of what we see, what we do, what people do. What we do reveals the fruit of our deeds, of our hearts. What's planted in our hearts is revealed in what it does, not in what it says. The heart in the Bible is, in this life, they usually get the seed of emotions, but in the Bible, the seed is, the heart is the seed of our belief system. God knows who we are, so he's not surprised by what we do. Think about that. But the reverse of that is, when you don't know who God is, you will misunderstand what he does. That's why people go through life and say, I don't understand why God. The reason you don't understand why God is because you don't come to him. His ways are not our ways. God may have to say, I don't understand why Joel did this. But yes, he does. He knows exactly who I am. What I'm capable of, what I think, what I've done. I want you to think about how many times, because what this comes down to is a belief or unbelief. I want you to think about how many times unbelief affected how Israel did what they did and the messes they got them into. The reason I'm pointing out Israel is because Jeremiah is addressing Israel. He's addressing them. This can easily be applied to both. Think about it for a minute. What kept the people of Israel out of the promised land that God had said to Abraham he was going to give them? Remember, they escape Egypt. They get down to the very edge of it. They send in spies, right? And the spies say, oh, it's a beautiful land. It does blow with coconut honey. It's exactly what God told us it was going to be. Man, you want to see the people there. Oh, there's something we hold. We can't go in there. We'll get in trouble. God says, you're believing in yourselves and not in me. Zechariah will come home and say these words. It's not by might, but by power of the Father's Spirit says the Lord. We always get unlucky when we see a big problem and think, I can't conquer that. What we do, because we make God our enemies, we say, God can't conquer that. We have this messed up sensation or thought that we believe it's all about us and not about him. So they get down to the edge of the promised land. That generation dies off. During the time of the judges, time and time again, instead of worshiping God, they worshiped false idols. And they lived in misery for that whole period of time. During the time of Isaiah and Jeremiah, it was their unbelief that kept them from repenting and turning back to God for help. That caused them to go to Egypt or to Babylon to seek help. That should have actually repented. Trying to get help instead of trusting in him. Listen to this. God knows hearts because he's God, and you know. We know hearts because of what we see that we do or others do. Please don't do that. We try to measure people.
Is this the argument of God knows?
Yeah, it is. God knows us and tells us.
Okay, yeah.
God knows what we do because of who we are. God doesn't take resumes. He doesn't keep scorecards. But God does love our love letters. Listen to this. Valentine's Day, don't you think, right?
Let me in the office.
And it's never going to be what you think it is.
Let's get started.
It's going to be who you are. And you are, just like me, full of a heart that can't be trusted. And because you can't trust your own heart, you can't know your own heart, you have to know the one you're not. That means a relationship. How is the relationship? God knows what we do because of who we are. We know who God is because of what he does. And here's the very important thing. Number one, our evil heart makes us keep God's recipe. Amen. We tend to sometimes keep scorecards on. Something doesn't work out as it should. You start out. Here's the funny thing about us. We rarely look at his heart. We rarely look for the love letter. We're all the time looking at what we think he does instead of looking at who he is. Instead of looking at him the way he looks at us. See, when he's an evil God, he's so dressed that what everything I do is justice and it's bad. No, he knows your people. He knows your heart. Well, you know. But he loves you anyway. What happens when you turn that around and look at him the way he looks at us? What happens when we try to really get a deep understanding of how much he loves us and what he said to us in Scripture? What if we try to know him for who he is? What if we try to know him for who he is instead of what he does? What's interesting about the passage we looked at this morning, Jeremiah 17, verses 5 to 10. Jeremiah starts off back in the first chapter. He says, that God speaks and says, before I formed you in the belly of your mother's womb, I knew you. And I consecrated you, and I ordained you to speak to the nation of Israel. That's all I have. God says, Jeremiah, your heart. I know that sometimes you're going to fail, sometimes you're going to fall, but I know your heart. I know who you really are. Because I created you with a purpose. I created you because I knew how deeply you would have the ability to go and speak to the nation. So I not only created you with that in mind, I consecrated you for that, I ordained that, I ordered that to be your life's purpose. Church, stop right here and understand God knows who you are and he knows why he put you here. There is a purpose for you. You are not random by chance. I was driving in church this morning and I was thinking about free radicals, right? The one charge in there that doesn't have a partner. It's looking for something to hook up with. It's looking for something to connect itself. That's how we are. And our life becomes chaos because we're bouncing around in life, just like a free radical. We're going around looking here and there looking for what we need to connect to. We think it's money, we think it's a job, we think it's our friends, we think it's all these things, never realizing that, right? And who is the call of God? And he's looking for us to recognize him for who he is. So we produce chaos, we lay it on him. Our life becomes whatever it becomes, we blame it on him. But we never take the time to do what he does with us. To look at him for who he is. He's the same yesterday, today, and forever. He's never going to change like our friends and our circumstances and our allies and all those things. He is going to be there loving us yesterday, today. Jeremiah, before I formed you in the womb, I knew. Church, I'll close with this. Before I came to this earth, you were in it. And you knew that I would have a heart that's desperately wicked. But I would never be able to that he had. Because he loves me so much, in spite of that heart, in spite of my actions and behaviors, in spite of all the trouble I've created, the chaos in my life that I've caused, he still loves me. That's why Jesus came to earth. Because he loves me. When we put aside and look at ourselves, we put aside depending on money, we put aside depending on whatever. around the bend, I can't see. That circumstance can become that which I don't know. You love me in spite of myself, and you'll never change me. I throw myself on you, and I trust you. The rest of my life is going to be eternity. That's what he calls us. Don't truly know who he is. See, he knows you. Why did you make a picture of him? He knows you. He loves you.